welcome to the Kryptonaut Podcast. My name is Mark Storrs, and hanging out with me, as always, is Mr. Robert Thomas Morphy II.
It is my pleasure to be here.
What's happening, buddy?
Not a lot. I mean, lots, actually. Tons of stuff. Crazy, hectic week, but I'm really glad to, like, culminate it. Even though it's hard to call Monday the culmination, but this is, like, my Friday night.
Yep.
This is my hanging out with the boys, fucking doing the do, talking to monsters, and so, yeah, good stuff all around. Even the stuff that wasn't good is getting better.
Yep, and don't forget, because we do operate in pod time, for us, this is the week of Thanksgiving, though this comes out after the givings of thanks.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
There's the old timey-wimey pod time that we try to explain, and we still can't do it.
Oh, I'm so stoked. I just love that it's like the day of engorgement. Or is that just getting a boner? Yeah.
If your Thanksgiving involves getting a boner, I won't judge you, but that's on you, good sir.
That's fair enough.
I plan on watching the Bills, and I have a 4-beer limit before I have to go to my in-laws, because if not, I will drink myself stupid, go to the in-laws, I'll eat stuffing and pass out.
That's fair,
that's
too.
It,
yeah. I mean, that sounds actually like a pretty good Thanksgiving.
Yeah, no, I get a little bit of Modern Warfare 2 in the morning, and then the Bills game starts around, like, I think 12:30 or something. So it's not, you know, it's not terrible. It's good to hang out, eat some food.
I like the old school tradition. Now, this is before your time. I'm old as shit, as everyone knows. And anyone that's from, like, the tri-state area, as they used to call it, anyone that had New York channels will remember WOR from Secaucus, New Jersey / New York. It was Channel 7 around here. Always on Thanksgiving had a King Kong marathon. And
oh,
by
really?
King Kong Marathon, it was Son of Kong, Mighty Joe Young, which is, you know, but it's a great film. I mean, no, it's one of his, what are you talking about?
It's
a Harryhausen masterpiece.
All right.
I mean, the original King Kong is a gem, but I mean, let's not shit on fucking Mighty Joe Young. I'm not talking about the Bill Paxton garbage remake.
I mean,
rest in peace. It's not his fault.
I prefer Kong versus Godzilla, but.
Well, all right, of course, but that was the beauty of it. As I've mentioned many times before, the day after Thanksgiving, WOR would do the Godzilla-thon.
Oh.
So you'd be eating your leftovers with your Hedoras and your Magellans and your whatnot.
They played the Hedora?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Dude, one of my greatest day afters, I think it played Magellan, Godzilla versus Magellan, Godzilla versus the Smog Monster, and Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla all in a row.
Oh, wow.
And when I was like an 8 or 9 year old kid eating leftovers, playing with my fucking Mattel Godzilla and Rodan and my Guns and Navarone playset, my happy place.
Speaking of a happy place, Patreon, Robert. Oh, shoehorned that in there.
Yeah, you
Let's
did.
Do some shout outs to the good folks that support us over there at patreon.com/Kryptonaut Podcast.
In a week of Thanksgiving, you know, extra special love goes out to these good souls. And we're going to begin with Jose Mendez.
Thank you, Jose.
Gorn Star.
Hell yeah, Gorn.
Ashley Clark.
Thank you, Ashley.
Dan Webb.
What up, Dan?
Håkon Ulfsson.
Thank you, Håkon.
Mark O'Hare.
Oh, Mark O'Hare. What's happening?
Bobby Tordy.
What up,
Bobby? Good old Bobby Tordy. I didn't expect to see him this holiday.
Now he's back, baby. He's back.
He's out. You
long,
know what I mean?
Long trip. He's back.
Manly P. Hall.
All right. Thank you, Manly.
Dale Ryder.
What up, Dale?
I'm sure that's like a real name, but that just sounds like, I don't know. It sounds like a pseudonym.
He's the guy that you want. He's the guy you want digging your driveway out. You're like, Dale Ryder's here. There you go.
Behold a Dale Ryder.
Yeah, sweet.
Velociraptor.
Thank you, Velociraptor.
And rounding it up this week, Lynette Marquis.
Oh, thank you, Lynette. Thank you all so very much for your continued support over there at patreon.com/Kryptonaut Podcast. We have an update. We've been talking about this. I don't know how many times we've had to reschedule this or whatever.
It's almost like an Andy Kaufman routine at this point.
Yeah, no, it really is. And I actually need to bring up the Discord app because it was put into the announcements and then I emailed it over to you, but then I completely forgot when exactly it is. But we have it. Our movie night is officially rescheduled for Friday, December 9th, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Everyone's favorite classic Christmas movie. Prince of Darkness.
Oh my God, the best.
There it is. So if you are on the Patreon, the $1 or the $2 or the $5 tier, one or five, no two, one or five. All right. Well, I guess some people do.
Literally, if you're a patron, you can.
Yes.
You can,
no matter what tier you're
on. No matter what.
Jump on Discord, watch this holiday classic with me and the boys.
Yes, again, Virginia, there is a Dark Lord.
Oh, there you go. It will be Friday, December 9th, 8:30 p.m. EST on the Discord. Check that out. Okay, we have some shout-outs to do here that are not going to be Patreon-related, but we put the call out. We're like, we all need help with words, okay?
Oh, my God, so much.
Cowichan and Nanaimo.
Yeah.
We couldn't figure it out.
Kuichin.
We still screw it up. Kuichin and Nanaimo.
Yes. We've had good listeners from the fucking region, bless them.
Yes. Yes, we have.
Let us know how we brutalized it and how to do it right.
All
right.
So we got Demaria. I'm sorry, Demara.
Yes, Demara. And thank you. Oh, your message was so sweet.
Yes,
you made my night. Thank you.
She also sent us an email that was super cool. She's from the region. Demara, thank you so much. Zach.
Yes.
Zach, what up? Thank you so much for the voicemail there, or for the voice message on the Instas. We appreciate it.
President Taft.
Trenton.
Couldn't have done it without you. Trenton, for real, though.
That's it. Trenton.
Trenton.
There you go.
So, yeah, all these good folks.
And, of course, on Discord, one of the first people to put this up, but they did it, like, phonetically, so I couldn't figure it out, was Johamed. So, thank you. We appreciate that. Yes. So, thank you all for your voice messages. We appreciate it. If you are listening to this, like, a year from now, don't send us any more voice messages. We already, we're good.
We're probably not revisiting this.
Yeah, no, we're totally good. But thank you all for the proper pronunciations.
I am going to miss Kuichin.
Well, it's Kuichin.
But it's Kuichin, which is actually how I always said it. But then, you know, we got caught up in our own headspace because there's a billion different ways out there. But the people that live it, that know it, that are there, they're the ones we're going to rely on.
Yeah, no. So we, thank you, though, for sending that. And doing the voice definitely helps because trying to do it phonetically, I'm still totally.
I can't even remember how I must have screwed up Nanaimo. Like, Nanaimo.
Dynamo. Oh, God. There it is.
Oh, I'm always tough on words, but last week was particularly brutal.
We can't pronounce shit.
I'm not anticipating an improvement this week.
I mean, well, we got Kuichin and Nanaimo.
We got Kuichin. Yeah.
There you go. So at least we know sort of where we're supposed to be. We know where we're supposed to be.
I'm Vancouver.
And we're here right now.
And in the studio.
So let's
that get, still smells of pumpernickel miraculously.
Let's get started with the Kuichin Encounter Part 2, Beepers and Energy Pirates.
Ooh, nice emphasis.
I want to see where this is going to go.
You sure do.
I do. So we'll get started with what began as a staring contest between a nurse and a pair of ETs just before dawn on New Year's Day 1970 quickly blossomed into one of the most harrowing UFO flaps in North American history. One that not only involved a wide variety of alien craft, but which may hold one of the keys to the aliens' otherwise enigmatic agenda.
Would you have it any other way?
If it's not enigmatic and there ain't an agenda, brother, I don't want to be a part of it.
No, absolutely not. And thank you for the Hulk Hogan. Thank you for that.
I've been giving a lot of brothers out. I'm like, brother.
Vitamins, milk, prayers. Thanks, brother.
I've been doing bro hugs.
To whom, brother?
Everything. Yes, exactly.
Bro hugs. Dude, brothers.
Bro hugs, dude.
But it's Thanksgiving week. What can you do?
I mean,
the pilgrims wouldn't have had it any other way.
Look, from now until at least January 1st, it's going to be bro hugs all around. All right?
Just bro hugs. Wait.
I've been bro hugging everybody.
Oh, dude, I haven't even got mine yet.
Dude, you're going to get yours.
I've been hanging out with you.
You're going to get a couple.
For like an hour.
All right, there it is. All right, well, Robert, let's get started.
Now I got something to look forward to.
Kuichin.
Okay. 5 a.m., January 1st, 1970. Rerun of Dragnet. Mark the time when a night shift nurse named Doreen Kendall bore witness to one of the strangest sightings ever reported by a Canadian medical professional in the middle of the night. I decided to have a few caveats there.
Okay, cool.
She and her fellow observers claimed that a large and evidently failing Saturn-shaped flying saucer was hovering just outside of the children's ward over the Kuichin District Hospital, and what's more, there was a pair of evidently masked pilots inside doing their level best to make sure the craft did not crash. And I assume before, you know, we're talking about them like yanking the levers and the dials and whatnot, like they're doing their level best not to destroy a children's ward of a hospital,
you know,
making them intergalactic heroes, potentially,
you know, or if they go down and they wipe out the kids, I mean, what are they going to do?
Oh,
unfortunately,
I mean, yeah.
Then it's a tragedy.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Then it's a tragedy.
Dick death. Yeah. Well done. The sighting was followed almost immediately by a report made by an unidentified truck driver and his wife of a massive, quote-unquote, spinning top-shaped object hovering directly over their Vancouver Island home. And that's the one that still blows my mind, because I think I see it in my head like, I see it like a two-story house. I don't really know what the house looked like, just a standard two-story house in like a normal suburban neighborhood. But then it's being brilliantly illuminated from above by something that's a little bit bigger, shaped like a spinning ice cream cone, comb of illumination, like right out of like Close Encounters.
And
you're just looking at something bigger than your fucking house or the size of your house going, the fudge.
You know, turn back around, go back to the party.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, or just go find a bar.
And as we established last week, our friend was a little tipsy.
Could have been.
Doesn't mean he was seeing things.
Dude, if I'm like 12 beers in, I'm still solid. When I cross like the 16 to 18 mark, that's when I start buying Sour Patch Kids and trying to feed them to people and forget about it. It's a whole thing.
There you go.
It's a whole thing.
It's called generosity.
I was trying to feed everyone Sour Patch Kids and I was shit-faced.
That's your Italian heritage coming through. So, yes, you're right. There is a line, and maybe it was crossed, maybe it wasn't.
Okay.
As if that weren't enough, hours later, teachers, aides, and students at nearby Alexander Elementary reported seeing a colossal hoop-shaped object in the skies above the school. These sightings, striking though they may have been, would prove to be just the tip of the proverbial iceberg, and that is where we left off with our accounts last week.
All right.
And if you haven't heard it, go back, enjoy that, and come back here.
We'll wait for you. Part one.
Arguably the second most significant, second after Nurse Kendall and the rest seeing the humanoids. And in my opinion, the most unnerving incident in this brief wave of anxiety-inducing entities and objects occurred approximately 10 miles away from the CDH, that's the Cowichan District Hospital, on the southeast shore of Vancouver Island in the quaint village of Mill Bay, which, for those that care, was established in 1860.
Okay.
That's neither here nor there.
All right.
A 22-year-old nautical pilot, and what a fucking title, and shipwright.
Dope. It's dope.
By the name of Jim Drummond, had used his boat building expertise to convert an aged tugboat into a comfortable home, which he shared with his 18-year-old bride, Diane, and their son. So he just takes an old tugboat, the little tugboat that could,
yeah,
the most adorable boat, turns it into a house for his family.
Dude, it's like a ranch style house on the sea.
Floating ranch?
Yeah, on the sea.
How are they going? What's the market for floating ranches?
I don't know. I'm waiting for the housing market to crash so I can sell my house and get a bigger one. That's a conversation for a different day. I need 4 bedrooms and I need 2 bathrooms in a basement.
That's
continue,
fair.
Robert.
You have a family. The boat was moored to a jetty on the shoreline of Mill Bay adjacent to the home of Jim's mother, Bea Drummond. Like a scene that might have been removed from an early, perhaps more frightening cut of Steven Spielberg's ufological masterpiece, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, still my favorite Spielberg film, the Drummond encounter, while not overtly violent, reminds us of the fact that, despite of humanity's hubris, we are very small when confronted with technology as advanced as that on display in what are ostensibly interstellar vehicles. We and our combustion engines and gunpowder and atom splitters are mere playthings. And whether or not we come to harm has less to do with the resistance we can offer and more to do with the whims of those in control of the UFOs, whatever their agendas or origins may be. But back to the Drummond's ordeal. So obviously that's a lot of hyperbole there, but basically, there's not shit we can do, and we know that.
Go down fighting.
It would be the mater familias of the clan, B, who would be the first to bear witness to this extraordinary floating object. When, at about 7 p.m., she walked out of her back door to call her son and family in for New Year's dinner. She described the beginning of this unusual event, which would prove to be every bit as bizarre as the nurse's encounter, which had occurred just hours before, by stating, quote, "It was about 7 o'clock and Jim and Diana were still on the boat, anchored close to shore when I went outside to call them in to dinner. Then I noticed a light in the sky moving over the bay. I couldn't tell how big it was. It was so bright and it had a yellow-orangey glow like sunlight. I got so excited, I yelled to my son to look," end quote. Hearing his mother's excited screams, Jim came out onto the deck of his houseboat and looked skyward. His eyes immediately registered the uncharacteristic object. He would later tell investigators that in the course of his job as a ship's pilot, he was accustomed to calculating the bearings of far-off objects, which is why he had confidence in the estimations he made that evening. According to Jim, quote, "I looked up and saw this light coming in from the north, just about in line with our boat. It was skimming right under the overcast, which was about 900 feet. I ran into the cabin and grabbed my telescope and camera, and my wife came out with me to look. We were really excited, end quote. Sadly, though just as likely accurately, Jim surmised that the unconventional vessel would just look like a smudge of light against a sea of darkness, so he set his camera down and began scrutinizing the UFO through the telescope. I dig that. I still wish we had those smudges.
Yeah, but you know, as soon
what do they do for
exactly?
Analog film smudges, dark with a light.
It's just going to muck it up.
It's going to look like shit. He's not wrong.
No.
You still want them.
Still has his handy-dandy telescope, though. So good on you, Jim.
But it's not crime. All right.
He can get a good look.
Jim described what he saw that chilly eve. Quote, it was sort of egg-shaped in a vertical position, but the top and bottom were indistinct. It seemed to be transparent on top, and inside it, I thought I could see a set of lights, but I couldn't really make out any details. End quote. So again, different shaped UFO. We had the hula hoop before. We have the ice cream cone above the drunk trucker's house.
Yep.
And now we've got something that looks like an egg with a translucent or transparent bubble on top.
No.
Again, shape shifting. Different things.
Saucer.
But it's not a saucer. It's an egg.
Oh, you're right.
It's a vertical egg with like just the clear dome on top.
It could have things in the outside that he just might not be able to see.
It's possible.
There you go.
Again, shape-shifting, Saturn unique,
rings.
Who the fuck knows?
Yeah.
Well, that was what the nurses described
the
beginning.
Yep.
And they will get described again, I think.
Okay.
All right. But be that as it may, it's interesting. B, a justifiably concerned matriarch, urged her son to get his family off the boat and into the relative safety of their house. Hoping to facilitate their passage over the dark pier, she flicked on the floodlight attached to the back porch, filling the yard with light. This elicited an unexpected response from the UFO. Without warning, the radiant amber object plummeted nearly 300 feet and began hovering directly between the house and the tugboat, effectively cutting Jim and his family off. But before either party could react, an even more alarming and, according to the laws of physics, seemingly impossible incident transpired. In Jim's own words, quote, just at that point, something came out of the thing, which by then had slowed down to almost a stop. It was a ray of light like a very thin neon tube, and it was in pieces, something like the dots and dashes of Morse code. It came down in a curve, and then it flashed right out, all of it at the same time. My hair just stood up on end. I couldn't imagine anything like it.
Oh, man.
That is a lot going on in just a few seconds.
Yeah, something apparently shot out of the ship. Obviously, first the lights coming on and it dropping.
Yes.
They're like, oh, shit. Like,
so it's
they
like,
see us.
She's trying to, you know, B's got the best intentions.
Yeah, but you gotta be like, hey, Ma, shut the fucking light off.
What are you doing?
Yeah, what are you doing?
Baby, I don't want you to twist your ankle.
Yeah.
Mom, I'll twist my fucking ankle. The UFO sees us.
Phenomenal Cowichan accents, by the way. Phenomenal.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Perfect.
Vancouver perfect. Island, all the way.
You're welcome.
Yeah, no, you definitely drew attention to yourself. All right, so this thing is all right.
But these fucking
it's
beams,
making moves.
If they're light beams, they don't, well, light can't curve, light can't dot and dash like Morse code. If it's like weird LED tendrils,
I don't know.
Maybe
a stair, a light, stairs of light.
Stairs of light.
Oh,
oh my God.
Okay.
Finding Jesus in the Stairs of Light.
Yeah, my
new collaboration.
My favorite song from, I don't know, whatever Christian rock band you hopefully don't enjoy.
Oh, my God, yes. Christ
Mullet.
All right,
well, let's,
Christ Mullet is
Christ
the name.
Christ Mullet. Let's see what happens.
Okay. So anyway, mind boggling.
Yep.
Just when it must have seemed that things were going to go from bad to worse, the object suddenly shot back up to its previous altitude, then soared southward and out of sight. On shore, B tried to follow the UFO's trajectory by dashing around her home, but to no avail. According to her account, quote, I ran to the other side of my house, but I couldn't see over the trees. I tried to phone some of the neighbors, but I couldn't get through on the party line, end quote. That really dates it.
It does.
Jesus Christ. Everyone can listen to everything you say all the time.
On the party line.
Jim continued to watch the vehicle's departure through his telescope, marveling at the curious structure and lack of sound. Later, he would testify that he was positive that it was not a conventional aircraft due to its irregular shape and lack of colored navigational lights. According to Jim, quote, it was brighter in the middle and I could see four distinct lights of the same color that looked like the tips of candles, only bigger. I have never heard of anything that could maneuver that slow and fast without making some sort of noise. So that's legit.
Yeah.
He's a shipwright.
Oh, dude, he knows
his shit. So I'm going to trust his opinion of shit in the sky.
I get it.
When the nurse's account was printed in the Cowichan Leader, I'm getting it right now,
nice.
The next week, it was accompanied by a smaller article simply titled Second Sighting, with a follow-up story having been printed on January 14th, 1970. Nevertheless, according to Bee's daughter and Jim's sister, Fran Drummond, who apparently wasn't there or was in the house at the time, her mother was reticent to even speak of the event up until her death in 2007 for fear of being labeled as a nut. Poor Bee.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but it is understandable, especially for the time.
Yeah, and she's older, and it's just what it is.
You don't want to bring a bunch of shit upon you.
Because, and I'm going to,
which sucks.
I'm gonna ream him out a little bit later, but it's Condon and all those sons of bitches that just ruined it for everyone.
I know, dude, you know?
All right.
It's a new day.
It's a new day.
All right,
a new day is dawn.
It's great because now the fucking Navy and the Air Force and all of our fucking armed forces can be like, yeah, there's fucking shit in the sky. We don't know what it is. So do with that what you
want. That's all we
Here's
ever
Jeremy Corbell. Great. Here we go.
All right, so there's good and bad. But no, I'm just kidding.
I enjoy Jeremy Corbell's
stuff. I do too. I'm just picking.
Do not take disinformation off the table.
But here's the thing.
Thank you, George Knapp.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right about that. All any of us ever wanted was acknowledge that there's some shit that you don't know what it is.
Right.
I mean, I think there are branches of the government, we're not going to digress too far, that obviously know more than others. And I think there's certainly people in the private sector, because that is where the most powerful branches of the government are now in terms of black money, that do. But still, that having been said, just generally don't be a dick about it to people that are reporting something that is genuinely anomalous.
Yeah, well, you know, unfortunately, thankfully now times are different. People can report stuff and it's not so, you know, hard on them.
Who knows if the backlash will come? Regardless. Mere moments after the Drummonds were temporarily severed from Bee's home by a glowing egg-shaped device, Judge George Hallett and his wife were entertaining three guests at a celebratory New Year's dinner at their home. Living directly behind Bee, the Halletts and company were in a unique position to confirm the Drummond's UFO account, and that's precisely what they did.
Got some more corroboration. I like it.
According to Canadian private investigator Leanne Jones, who may or may not be a medical doctor, too. Again, we know my internet research is sketchy sometimes.
Did you look up her Facebook profile by any chance?
Well, I just...
You know what? Let's not. Let's not. Don't worry about it. It's okay.
All right.
Move on. We're good.
So anyway, Leanne Jones, who reconstructed the case in 2008, the Hallett sighting directly followed the Drummond's run-in. The dinner party all claimed that they watched as a massive orange light passed leisurely along the water's edge opposite their home. According to Judge Hallett, quote, this was no ordinary aircraft, and it was no plastic bag trick either. I think he's assuming like Chinese lantern or something. I don't know.
I'm not sure.
It was making no sound that we could detect. It was moving very slowly, and it was enormous. I'm quite sure no one could play a trick with such a large apparatus without being spotted. We watched it for about 5 minutes until it seemed to disappear in the clouds, end quote. So
right
there, back to back. Now they didn't get the full on look of the thing intercepting, you know, Jim, Diane, and baby.
But they definitely saw it.
Yes.
Cool.
It would be easy to assume that after no less than 5 encounters with members of the human race, that these alien interlopers, be they the same ones originally seen by the Cowichan nurses or 5 unique groups who were all drawn to the area, would call it a day. But that was not to be the case. Not long after 7 o'clock in the evening on that same New Year's Day, just following both the Hallett and Drummond sightings, the ubiquitous UFO made its presence known yet again on Mill Bay. This time, the glowing object would appear to the attendees of yet another dinner party, this one being hosted by Arthur Gillum and his wife at the Deer Lodge restaurant just off the Island Highway south of Mill Bay.
This thing loves dinner parties, dude.
He's loving dinner parties.
I mean, there's
it's New Year's Day. A lot of dinner parties on the lake.
Apparently.
Mill Bay likes dinner parties.
Dinner parties for days.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
While the sighting occurred at a greater distance than either the Drummonds or the Hallett sightings, all of the observers in attendance agreed that they saw a colossal sphere of illumination cruising over the Saanich Peninsula about 10 miles to the east. According to Gillum, all we could see was a large ball of light moving quite slowly, much slower than an airplane. It must have been very bright for us to see it from that distance. I don't think a helicopter would have been that bright. End quote. While in and of itself, this long-distance sighting is nothing to get excited about, taken in conjunction with the Drummond's frightening run-in and Judge Hallett and his cohort's observations, it serves to further cement the fact that there was a genuinely anomalous aircraft soaring over Mill Bay that New Year's Day Eve. And while there's no proof that these events are even remotely related to the CDH incident of that morning, the circumstantial evidence seems too obvious to ignore.
Oh, we got a flap of UFOs, Robert.
Flapping around.
There you go.
While the events of January 1st, 1970 were seminal in the history of Canadian UFO encounters, it would be far from the first or last day that the residents of Vancouver Island would be plagued by strange nocturnal visitors. Perhaps the most auspicious witness to these events would be the then mayor of Duncan, the specific city within which the Cowichan District Hospital is nestled, Jim Quaife. God bless. I love the name Quaife.
All right.
It just sounds like a rare bird.
The Quaife have returned.
Look at this. Oh, the fertile Quaife have nested.
The Quaife is dead.
Oh, God.
Enjoy the Quaife, children.
But this January encounter would not be the mayor's first run-in with a UFO. As Jim claimed that in late 1964, he was relaxing in his Coronation Street home when he heard what he described as a turbine-like sound. This will play into it. The mayor leapt to his feet, yanked back the curtain, and looked out the window. What he saw would be something he would never forget. The mayor asserted that his entire backyard was bathed in a brilliant white light, which emanated from an unknown source above. He later stated that his eye had been caught by a doe frozen like a proverbial deer in headlights near his orchard.
All right.
Jim wasted no time in grabbing his rifle and charging outside. The moment he stepped out his door, the light disappeared, enabling him, to see what he described as a large, non-aerodynamic craft, which soundlessly sped off at a tremendous rate of speed. So I don't know what that is. Non-aerodynamic could be anything round, okay. Weird, fucked up.
Triangle, rhombus.
Square.
Yeah, pyramid.
Borgonet.
Yeah, all right, cool.
Though it would be his first, it would not be Jim's final encounter with a UAP. On January 13th, 1970, less than 2 weeks after the flap began above the Cowichan District Hospital, the mayor arrived home after a city council meeting to find his neighbor staring skyward. Do you ever just get out of a car and see people looking up? Usually it's like lightning or a kite,
yeah,
or some weird thing, it's hanging like,
come
from
on,
a line.
Not now.
But you're like, oh, you just hope. You always hope.
Yeah, it's always a problem, though.
Yeah.
It's always an I gotta take care of it. Something stuck on the roof.
The ultimate dad. That's true. Yeah.
Fucking son of a bitch.
The city leader followed his fellow citizens' gaze, and it came to rest on a bulky, unknown craft pulsating with a purple radiance while it hovered above a nearby power plant. Jim rushed into the house to fetch his binoculars and his wife, good man.
There you go.
The trio watched the strange pulsing object perform ostensibly impossible aerial maneuvers, including abrupt reversals of direction and dead stops for at least 10 minutes until the vessel soared off at a breakneck pace toward Mount Provost, then cut a 90-degree angle and shot straight up into the air. So, second bona fide UFO sighting for the mayor.
Mayor's fucking man about town here, just seeing all kinds of crazy UAPs and shit.
Mm-hmm. According to Quaife, the following day, an article was published in the Times Colonist regarding an amateur astronomer and UFO buff and president of the Cowichan Chimanus UFO Club. So, let's get this straight again. I'm gonna tackle this one more time.
All right.
The Times Colonist wrote an article regarding amateur astronomer, UFO buff, and president of the Cowichan Chimanus UFO Club by the name of Vernon Stanley Jones.
Vernon.
Good old VSJ.
There you go.
Who had constructed his own observation tower on Richards Trail Road in Duncan.
Okay, so he's just making his own tower.
He's making his own UFO tower.
There's got to be permits for that.
It's got to be just like the one in Loveland that was like supposed to fight the commies, but got attacked by UFOs.
Yeah, no, you better make sure you got a permit for that.
Oh, come on, Vern. Yeah. He's got that shit in lockdown.
VSJ.
He not only claimed to have spied the UFO, but he also had a theory regarding its agenda. A theory which was shared by Mayor Quaife himself.
Oh, this is some early fucking Reddit shit right here.
That's pre-internet. That's how it worked.
Here you go.
And now, a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. Unfortunately, life doesn't come with a user manual. So when it's not working for you, it's normal to feel stuck. When those mental hobgoblins are running amok in the mind palace and making a mess of the place, it can get overwhelming. Navigating any of life's challenges can make you feel unsure, whether it's a career change, a new relationship, or becoming a parent. Therapists are trained to help you figure out the cause of challenging emotions and learn productive coping skills, which makes therapy the closest thing to a guided tour of the complex engine called you. If you're looking to learn coping skills, self-empowerment, contrastive ways to deal with trauma, therapy, and BetterHelp are the way to go. As the world's largest therapy service, BetterHelp has matched 3 million people with professionally licensed and vetted therapists available 100% online. Plus, it's affordable and convenient. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to match with a therapist. And if things aren't clicking, you can easily switch to a new therapist anytime. It couldn't be simpler. No waiting rooms, no traffic, no endless searching for the right therapist. Learn more now and save 10% on your first month at BetterHelp.com/HellerSpace. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/HellerSpace. And now back to the show.
Vern, fascinated by the mysteries of the cosmos and even more intrigued by Nurse Kendall's allegedly unearthly visitors, was exceedingly diligent in collecting evidence regarding the rash of UFO sightings taking place in his hometown. But it wouldn't be until 5 days after the initial flap that he would have a close encounter of his own that broke the news. Though, much like the mayor before him, it would not be the first airborne anomaly that he claimed to have seen. The event in question occurred on Lakes Road on the evening of January 6th, 1970, when he and his wife spied a massive orange disc-shaped object, back to disc,
okay,
flying slowly over Lakes Road Hill at approximately 11 p.m. The recreational stargazer pulled over to the side of the road and killed his headlights while he and his wife watched this amazing aircraft float between 500 and 1,000 feet off of the ground for approximately 8 minutes. It was at this point that things took a turn toward the weird and potentially dangerous, when Vern and his wife and a few other unidentified eyewitnesses claimed that the UFO shot out a series of fireballs as it traveled northward. Were these fireballs intended to serve as some kind of warning shot, shooing the observers back, or might it have been some sort of exhaust from yet another not quite up to par flying saucer? Perhaps these fireballs were merely the eyewitnesses' interpretation of the same strange Morse code-like series of illuminated dashes and dots that Jim Drummond claimed to have seen through his telescope just days before. Either way, Vern claimed that the craft was the biggest thing he had ever seen, which is saying something. I mean, maybe he's never seen a skyscraper or a blimp or whatever.
Things in the air can be big.
Before describing the scene for reporters.
Okay.
And this is what he said. When it reached the bottom of the hill, it paused briefly, then turned right and flew over Duncan. When it was over the center of Duncan, it stopped again, and we watched it just hanging there for a while. Then it moved off due west more rapidly, end quote. Which is interesting because it's stopping over a city center. Now, maybe a small city, a small town, but you would think
people would catch it.
I'm sure there's plenty of other eyewitnesses. Right. Now, it's 11 p.m. I don't know what's going on at 11 p.m. in 1970 in the dead of winter in Vancouver Island.
Drinking, partying, hanging
probably
out. Yeah, fucking chilling.
And maybe not a lot of people outside. Maybe it's cold.
Yeah.
Probably very cold.
Could be.
But you'd think there's more eyewitnesses that have come forward is what I'm saying.
Totally.
As the vehicle sped out of sight, the couple raced to a nearby friend's home and borrowed a pair of binoculars. Thank God there's telescopes and binoculars everywhere.
Quick, I need your binoculars.
I need your double eyes.
There's a UFO shooting fireballs. Like, oh, really? Okay. Enjoy.
Sadly, they were only able to reacquire the oddly moving object for a few moments before it disappeared for good. Vern then speculated that this might herald the return of a phenomenon that folks had dubbed the beepers.
Oh, boy.
Beepers.
Okay. All right. Here we go. Now we're getting into the beepers.
When queried about this odd appellation, Vern later explained to a local reporter, Sharon Currie, who incidentally had been the reporter assigned to cover both the CDH and Drummond events, so she's seasoned in this UFO flap, that 2 years previous, individuals from the Cowichan region claimed to have heard weird electronic, quote, beeping sounds, but couldn't see anything. He also asserted that similar sounds, had been picked up on an 80-meter band by a ham radio operator. Though this bootstrap scientist could offer no explanation as to the origins of these so-called beepers, it seemed evident that some believed the phenomenon to be self-aware and potentially extraterrestrial. I don't know about ham radio operators finding these things, but a signal, a coded signal that seems to be intelligent. I mean, it's, you know, maybe not the wow signal, but, you know, something pretty impressive that he's aware of as an amateur astronomer, and maybe other people that are involved in the, oh my God, what was the name of it? Chimanus Cowichan UFO Society or whatever.
Yes.
So I'm sure this is something they've talked about a lot, but it's interesting that they have a name.
Yeah, the beepers.
And I know that other people have claimed to have seen or heard things like this, but this is kind of unique.
Yeah.
Okay. Vernon Stanley Jones' story was published on January 14th, 1970, under the title Local Witness Claims UFO Eject Fireballs. Here's an excerpt. Quote, fireballs ejected from a UFO hovering over Maple Bay and Crofton area last week could mark the return of the beepers. Vernon Stanley Jones, president, as we just established, of the Cowichan Chimanus UFO Club, advocated. Stanley Jones, considered an expert on UFOs for more than a decade, mooted such a possibility after he and his wife and several other people in the area witnessed a large, bright, yellow-orange craft cruising over the area on January 6th, 1970. Okay, so basically all that does is repeat a lot of the things that we said, though I'm not sure what is meant by mooted the point, but beepers. The beepers are back.
Beepers.
As if these enigmatic beepers weren't enough. According to Leanne Jones, the aforementioned private investigator and maybe doctor who'd managed to piece together the bulk of the story in the 21st century, the area where the couple saw the UFO on Lake Road was less than 2 miles from the giant power grid mentioned by Mayor Quaife in his account. Based on this correlation, both Vernon Stanley Jones and Quaife proposed that this luminescent craft was in all probability making quote-unquote fuel stops and sucking up energy from the grid.
And there's their theory.
Energy pirates and beepers, baby.
Energy pirates, there it is. All right.
It's the old Quaife-Stanley Jones connection. They're probably the only two fucking members of this UFO club.
Yeah, no, they definitely got hammered. They're like, I got it. I know what they're doing. They're taking our fucking power, the sons of bitches. And you know they're probably all pissy about it, which, you know, you should be, because I don't know how electric bills were back then, but I'm getting fucking murdered by NYSA.
I'm sure they were pretty steep. I mean, this is before the great oil embargo, I think, of the mid-early 70s.
Yeah, I remember.
No, you don't.
Oh, of course not.
I don't either. But but I've seen news footage.
Yeah.
And apparently lines were long, and depending on your license plate, like, you either got gas on even or odd days.
Oh, yeah. I remember my parents telling me about that, and I was like, man, that's some bullshit.
And it was like $4 plus in the 70s, so that must have seemed like $11 a fucking gallon.
We're probably going to head that way eventually at some point. So.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure. I mean,
we've been on the slow slide to Mad Max since we were kids.
It is the slowest goddamn slide ever. So slow.
Yeah. No one's ever going to get the cool football pads. We're not going to have time. It's just going to be slow, slow, slow. Precipice.
And then we're fucked.
Thanks,
right.
Fossil fuel.
All right, well, there's their theory. I like it because it is a common theory that is shared amongst many enthusiasts of the UFOs.
Yes,
they're like, hey, they're here to collect power.
Water,
why
power.
Why the fuck they need electricity? Who knows? Water, I get.
They love our pebbles.
I don't know. Well, you know.
You know they love collecting rocks.
I mean, you know.
But water and power make sense.
Fossil fuels, folks.
I don't imagine that hydroelectric power is what fuels a starship, but who the fuck am I to say?
I mean, if that's the case, man, just make yourself a little dam, you know, get a little dam going.
Get yourself a little turbine.
Yeah, just get yourself a little, you can make them.
I mean,
shit.
If you have like a perpetual motion beaver on your ship,
just
that could be your power source.
Get some water moving, man. Get that turbine spinning, man. Crank them engines up, dog.
Mm.
Make that energy.
There it is.
Let's continue.
All right. So we're going to quote Mayor Quaife.
All right.
He says,
Mr. Quaife.
Actually, I didn't talk with Vern until after I spotted his report about the event in the Times Colonist a day or so later. When I called and advised him that I thought the craft was over his neck of the woods, he stated that he thought it was over Duncan. At this point, I suggested it was neither. It had to be somewhere in between. That's some internet discussion on a phone. Like, it's got to be over here. No, it's over here. It's between our houses.
Figure. Go to Google Maps. It doesn't exist yet.
Oh,
Jesus.
All right. Okay. I'm losing my spot here. It had to be somewhere in between, which would have placed it over or near the AC/DC substation on the island highway. I then suggested that the craft may have been refueling or tapping into the energy field of the substation. Vernon immediately questioned why I thought they needed to draw on electric energy, and I related the story of my first incident on Riverside Road a few years earlier that I had distinctly heard a turbine-like sound. He then agreed, saying that they have to refuel somewhere, and maybe that's how and where. A meeting of the fucking minds.
The only thing I'm going to throw out here, and I by no means am a substation expert, but I do take care of one on a fairly regular basis. They are, and ours is actually, I don't know, is ours from the 70s, 80s? Ours is old. It actually has to, you have to hand crank that fucker, and then we have a special stick. It's like a broom handle that we have the broom off of it, and when we got to pop the breaker back on, we stand outside and we like hit it, and then we hope we don't blow up.
Oh my god.
Welcome to my job.
That is literally how it works.
Yes.
Jeez Louise.
It's actually a hand crank for it, which is not uncommon, but substations are notoriously fucking fickle. A little bit of energy fart, this little these things fucking trip. So
wow.
Just putting it out there that if these things were getting energy sucked from them, especially like a large amount like that, it would more than likely
cause problems.
It might not trip anything though, depending on the station and how, but this is back in the fucking day when substations were barely fucking substations. Probably they were just,
you know,
old garbage tech.
I really don't know how any of this is working. I just love that a local mayor and a local amateur astronomer getting together. And I love that that Vernon's like, why the fuck would they need to steal our electricity? He goes, I saw a purple cloud over a substation a few years ago with a UFO. And he's like, then why not?
Yeah. You know? And by all means, don't let my inexperience or my pokey stick to trip the fucking breaker. Don't let that sway anybody, because I have no fucking idea.
I mean, they could be right. They could be wrong.
Yeah.
I'm not saying.
It's interesting.
They're more qualified. Both of them are more qualified than I will ever be to judge what this is. But I just love that through newspaper reports, God knows how old, we're basically getting a blow-by-blow description of how they come to conclusions.
All right, here we go.
Speculative though it may be, it's a theory that Leanne Jones seems to support. That you'll remember, that's the investigator that put it all together in 2008. Quote, perhaps sonoluminescence is the true source of UFO propulsion. Oh, you don't know what sonoluminescence is, do you?
I see that you're going to describe it to me here, though, in your story.
The emission of short bursts of light from imploding bubbles of liquid when excited by sound. Stop being such a plebe. Okay, read a fucking book for once.
I'll be sure to look. What was it? Sonoluminescence?
Yes. Yeah. Sonoluminescence. I've never heard it.
It sounds like a terrible song.
Yeah, I did not have to Google that at all.
Okay, cool. All right.
No, it really is. It's like a Depeche Mode album. Like one of their in-between experimental ones.
Yeah.
Super prog.
Oh, all right.
So, I mean, I don't understand. I don't know where Jones is coming from. I don't really understand how, like, imploding bubbles of liquid excited by sound. But why not?
Hey,
I mean, it's as valid as anything else.
I'm there, dude.
It's basically wet farts.
Yeah.
So I'm okay with that. Because it makes it funny.
My UFO is powered by wet farts. That'd be a great bumper sticker.
Wow. So Jones goes on to say, perhaps we have been too naive to realize until now that UFO piracy, i.e. the theft of Earth's energy resources, may be one of the major reasons for UFO activities around Earth, as well as government secrecy and denial. The possibility that alien presences may be leaching electrical and nuclear energy, as well as human DNA and animal biological material, may be one of the most closely guarded secrets of all the world's government. End quote. Ms. Jones, you might be new to the UFO field in 2008. I don't think you were the first one to get there, but God bless you. A lot of people are here and we're all together and, you know, cattle mutilations and energy stealing is the thing.
We're all on the same page. We're all like, yeah, no, that shit's real.
I sounded like I was belittling her. I shouldn't have been, because everyone has to come to this conclusion.
Yeah, no, unfortunately, you get to the part where you're, as soon as you get to the shadow government, you're like, oh, now we got to dig deep.
Now we got to dig.
And then you're going to hit problematic people. Remember what we said about the problematic people. Go past them. Make your own judgment. Don't blame groups of people that don't need to be blamed for shit. Just keep going past them.
Yeah,
That's absolutely what the shadow government wants you to do. They want you to fight each other. Don't unite against the shadow government.
There it is.
ISPs. I don't know what that means. I'm sorry. VPNs. Use them to protect yourself from your ISP getting snooped by the government.
I understood.
NordVPN. They used to sponsor us.
They did.
They don't anymore.
They ought to.
They might come back. We got BetterHelp. Fuck it. We got BetterHelp. When the shit gets too deep, BetterHelp.com/HellerSpace.
There it is.
I forget what the promo is. It's BetterHelp.com/HellerSpace. There's going to be ad in this episode. It would have at this timestamp, it would have already played. Robert, continue.
God bless.
There you go. Shadow governments, watch out. We're uniting. We're coming for you.
No, I mean, anytime, once a scapegoat gets thrown in there, realize you're dealing with something shady.
Yeah, exactly.
No matter who or what, as soon as they start saying, and it's them, and not even just the obvious suspects, like the dumb fuck,
you fucker,
anybody, like carpet salesman, the guy who fucking, you know, tunes fucking Iron Maiden's guitar.
Keep your eyes on the shadow government.
Keep your eyes on it. Two eyes.
Yes.
Three, if you have it.
There you go.
It's enough to keep you up nights.
It is.
But even though sightings of these assorted, multitudinous spacecraft over Vancouver Island quickly dissipated, February of 1970 would offer a last hurrah for UFO watchers. About a month after all of the hubbub seemed to have fizzled, a farmer by the name of John Vanderhoek, and that instantly brings Ren and Stimpy to mind, the fucking kind of, I don't even know, is that Amsterdam Dutch? I don't know, the Hook. Anyway, Ren and Stimpy fans know what I'm talking about. I barely do.
No, I know.
Reported to authorities that motorists were congregating in front of his property near Vancouver Island Highway in order to catch a glimpse of a quote-unquote red thing in the air. Vanderhoek claimed that the object, which was white on the top and red at the bottom, was ascending and descending yo-yo-like, all the while varying in luminosity from dull to brilliant. So I guess a rolling, as it goes down, it's like getting brighter. As it goes up, it's getting dimmer in my mind. I'm not sure, but it's pretty cool. As he phoned in the report, Vanderhoek could only stare at in what must have been a combination of disappointment and relief as the lights receded into the west, finally disappearing into the mountains. The farmer and the other observers swore that there was no wind that evening and that they had no doubt that the object was intelligently controlled. UFO sightings have continued in the area sporadically since then, with a report being filed as recently as July 3rd, 2010. I haven't looked for more recent ones, though it's very possible, leading some to wonder if the region might not be a window into another world where the veil is thin, where the window's been cracked.
We have heard from some folks in the area, and they've said that there's some weird stuff. So here's the deal. As always, if you got your stories, email them over to kryptonautpodcast@gmail.com. We could quite possibly use them for a listener story.
Hell yeah.
So this would be a great follow-up. If you got a bunch of weird shit from the area, email that over.
There's
got
to be mad Squatch
action. And we'll turn it into a cool listener stories.
And other cryptids.
Yeah, I'm sure. Plus UFOs and shit, man.
Ghosts.
Fucking crazy. Dude, hobgoblins.
Hobgoblins.
Oh, there it is.
Okay.
All right.
So there it is. There's the bulk of it. There's the flap. This is the Cowichan.
Yep.
Cowichan Odyssey. But it's not 100% over.
Oh, shit. Okay.
In the days that followed the sighting, Jim Drummond claimed that he was visited by a United States Air Force officer who claimed to hail from Nevada.
We have no fucking jurisdiction in Canada, sir.
They do not. The military man claimed to be a representative of America's official investigative organization dedicated to uncovering the truth about the UFO mystery, Project Blue Book. Intriguingly, Project Blue Book had been disbanded just days before in December of 1969.
Maybe he was traveling there. They didn't tell him.
They didn't tell him. He didn't get the memo.
Hynek didn't fucking get a telegram. He's too busy with his dope fucking goatee smoking a
pipe. Oh, yeah. No, you got to wax that
Van
fucker.
Dyke or whatever he had going on.
Yeah. He had the hypest Van Dyke.
Fuck yeah, dude. Smooth operator.
Indeed. Intriguingly, as I said, that it had been disbanded, following the release of the notoriously slanted Condon Committee report. The Condon Committee was the official title, unofficial title, excuse me, of the University of Colorado UFO Project, an assemblage funded by the United States Air Force at the university to study unidentified flying objects under the direction of the clearly biased, if not outright corrupt, physicist Edward Condon from 1966 to 1968. What was supposed to be a reasonable assessment of the UFO phenomenon was, according to many researchers and numerous inside reports, including a documented memo from one of the men in charge, nothing but a hack job with the preordained outcome of delegitimizing the entire field of study and thus reducing public panic and therefore interest in UFOs. Nevertheless, the media celebrated the results of this pseudoscientific report, and whether individual reporters realize it or not, Western societies in general and the press in particular have based their ridicule of this authentic phenomenon on the presumed authenticity of the Condon Report and other misleading campaigns inspired by the Robertson panel ever since, but I fucking digress.
So you are not besties with the Condon Report?
Yeah, E. Condon, go suck it.
Okay. All right.
This piece of shit.
All right. Listen.
Any scientist worth their weight in salt is going to fucking look at something on by. And even if I know it's all patriotism. Like the Air Force is like, we don't want to scare people and we don't want to waste our time. We got commies to worry about. You got to put a kibosh on it. But he didn't even try.
Some dude
didn't even fucking try.
This is where all of our goddamn hard earned tax money goes. We pay taxes.
Yes.
You recently, very recently.
I know. I've been living off the grid for so many years.
I know. And now you got a fucking tax man's coming for you.
Tax man's coming. I'm on the grid. That's my VPN.
That tax man's coming. You better hook that VPN up.
Dude, I'm legit. And I'm above board. I'm fucking, wow.
Living
forever under the radar.
Here we go.
Nevertheless.
Yep.
In the early days of 1970, members were still unofficially investigating accounts. That is, members of the former Project Blue Book. Which may well make the Vancouver Island incidents the last UFO reports to be examined by the Blue Book team. That having been noted, there are some researchers who speculate that the military officer who questioned Jim Drummond was actually among the first wave of post-Blue Book and pre-ATIP investigators who would continue the project's work in confidential or top-secret fashion. There is also the very real possibility, according to Leanne Jones, that Jim Drummond's United States Air Force military man, quote unquote, was using Project Blue Book as a cover for another more clandestine organization. So that's long been speculated, obviously, that there was somebody really studying the phenomenon.
Okay.
And that Blue Book and Grudge, you know, were just the surface ones,
right,
designed to appease the public, allay some fears, debunk things. And then finally, by the end, like even before Condon really threw his fucking monkey dick in the works, just basically explain away and shit on accounts. Yeah. But obviously, there's probably always been some group looking into it.
I mean, there's no way there hasn't been.
And it all depends 100% on one thing or not. I mean, did Roswell or Aztec or whatever, was there anything recovered? If Roswell happened, then 100% there's been deep investigations ever since, huge branches of the scientific establishment within the government that have looked into the stuff because they know it's a fact and they have to.
Mm-hmm.
If it did not happen, then I still think I would contend that there is a solid contingent of people that had been, the way it is now, like publicly acknowledged, they're looking into it, especially since ATIP, however shady and weird that is, fucking that at least are trying to get to the bottom of the phenomenon, if only because they don't know, and legitimate pilots, you know, who are, you know, one of our best lines of defense are saying, oh shit, we're in jeopardy up here.
Yeah.
We got to be careful.
And I think like most things, you know, bureaucracy and governmentally run things. I think it's just people punching in from 9 to 5, trying to do their best. And they're probably no further with it than we are.
You're absolutely right.
That's what it comes down
to. One of the truest things that I think that I've ever read. And again, I mean, you can take Lou Elizondo, is that not Lou Elizondo? Yeah. That's an actor. That's a guy who allegedly was in charge of ATIP.
Yeah.
And other people, so like some people in the government say, oh no, he was never officially there. I don't know.
There's a lot with him where people are like,
but the one thing that smacked me of the most legitimate thing of all this paranormal stuff is that there is a contingent within the Pentagon that simply does not want to study this, not because it might not pose a threat, not because this technology might not be real, not because it might not even represent our chance to interact with non-human intelligence, but because they're convinced that that it must have a satanic agenda. I mean, and if there's one thing that runs deep in American culture, this puritanical fucking, you know, yeah,
it always
jambalaya, it's that fucking someone's going to throw Christianity into it and they're going to be afraid of truth because of religious bias.
It's so dumb because no matter what it is, it always goes back to that. And that's like we've talked about it before. That's the unfortunate part is you could get all of this put out there and then they're like, it's Satan. He's coming for you. The satanic panic is back. I don't know if you've heard about this.
I did not.
It's 100% back.
I had no idea.
Fucking so dumb.
It's not just, daycares anymore, right?
No.
And heavy metal album?
We don't get into politics. It's just stupid fucking political shit.
Okay.
So we'll leave it there.
All right, we'll leave it there.
But it's, yes.
But,
it's
but
back,
not
it's
investigating
strong.
A potential threat or the chance to advance our own ability to create, you know, non-fossil fuel-based energy because the devil might be involved is just asinine.
Listen, never take the devil off the table.
Oh, yeah.
And never underestimate stupid.
There it is.
Because there's a lot of stupid that's just festering and they're in charge. So
bless your heart.
Truer
words have never been spoken.
There it is. Well people, said, connect your VPNs. Don't let them see what you're looking at on the fucking internet.
All right.
And especially if you're downloading torrents. Not saying you should.
No, yeah.
Just saying.
Shit. Old there school. Okay. So, Jones went on to speculate. Remember where she's thinking about like what non-Blue Book affiliations that this Air Force man might have had.
Yep.
Jones speculated that this mystery man was not CIA or NSA, but most likely a representative of the Air Force Office of Special Investigations, the OSI, which I'm very convinced has a lot to do with it, especially back then.
Never underestimate the Air Force.
No.
Everyone's always like, oh, it's the Air Force. Guess what? Stealth bombers, motherfucker.
I would never underestimate the Air Force.
Don't.
Jeez.
I'm here to tell you not to.
Okay.
Stealth bombers, think about it.
God damn it.
Don't think too hard.
It's the first model I ever had. I tried to put it together. It was like a snap-on plastic model. I suck at models so bad. Anyway, which was instituting another UFO investigation project under an as yet unknown code name. This is, of course, again, according to Jones.
Okay.
I don't think that any rational individual would doubt for a second that any government on Earth would take very seriously the potential threat that might come from hyper-technological aircraft that can invade their airspace undetected and at will, whatever their intentions may be. I wrote, this is before I realized that, oh, yeah, there's going to be some representative of the government that won't do it because it might be piloted by a demon. So, you know, that was me overestimating things back in 2011. There's not a government on Earth that wouldn't be smart enough.
Okay,
there's werewolves in the Pentagon.
Yes,
free plug. Hope you're happy, guys.
They got werewolves?
Oh,
wow. How about Draculas?
Draculas.
Do you have any creature from the Black Lagoon?
Oh, my God. Oh. Mummies in Hangar 18.
Dude.
Read about it later.
It's all fun and games until fucking 15 years from now, someone finds this podcast like, those fuckers knew about
knew everything.
They knew about the Dracules.
The Dracules.
And the fucking werewolves.
How'd they know how to pronounce it?
They knew about the Volves.
We're going to conclude this fucker.
All right. The Volves. Conclude it up.
So what to make of these incredible UFO sightings? There can be little debate that this is really one of the most remarkable UFO/humanoid cases in modern history. First off, it offers up an amazing amount of corroborating evidence in terms of flaps. I mean,
totally.
You got Phoenix Lights, you got, you know, Hare Airport. There's lots of famous UFO flaps, but this offers a lot of like instant corroboration.
Cowichan's fucking jumping.
Yeah. So it's fascinating. Not only that, but also proffers some of the more outstanding eyewitnesses ever assembled, running the gamut from a cadre of healthcare professionals to a ship's pilot to educators and administrators to a judge to a mayor to many other respected citizens and an amateur astronomer. I'm not going to forget Vern. It's an impressive array, to say the least. In fact, if the above-mentioned witnesses had claimed to observe a crime rather than a UFO, the old classic trope, the caveat, then just about any jury would deliberate for mere moments before moving to convict. What's more, the folks involved have all stuck by their stories for over 40 years, and none of them have made any overt efforts to exploit their experiences. Perhaps Jones put it most succinctly, quote, "A significant factor of this sighting is that none of the witnesses have made any effort to publicize it, yet at the same time made no pretense of being secretive," end quote, which again is not to say that if you want to write a book about your experience, it's a lie. There's no shame in wanting to share your story, and there's no shame in making a couple bucks off of it, but you do run the risk of people, you know, they're going to accuse you of pulling a Lutz.
Right.
And, you know, and maybe you are. Who the fuck knows? But there it is. In terms of Frieda and Doreen, you remember our original nurses?
I do, yeah.
Who bore witness to what is arguably the most unbelievable element of the case, the humanoids, or at least Kendall did. I believe that the investigators who published the details of the case in the summer of 1970 edition of the Canadian UFO Report, Volume 1, Number 7, which I've never read an issue of it. I'd love to get my hands on some, described their credentials as professional caregivers and witnesses perfectly by saying, quote, "Miss Doreen Kendall, a practical nurse, and Miss Frieda Wilson, a registered nurse, are employed together on the night shift in the extended care ward for elderly patients at the Cowichan District Hospital at Duncan on Vancouver Island. Theirs is a position that requires a special degree of tact, maturity, and gentleness of manner, for it is at night that their patients, often unable to sleep, have long, lonely hours in which to contemplate the little that remains for them in life." Jesus, that's brutal.
Holy shit. Oh, my God. Dude, I just got bummed out. Oh, my God. Frieda and Doreen, hats off. Ladies, full respect.
Jeez.
Oh my God. I did the fingers in the air. I'm like,
yeah, you're
totally. What is this? Hunger Games, right? Is that Hunger Games?
I think Jesus did that a lot too.
Yeah, this is Hunger Games. I'm Hunger Games in them. You guys are fucking saints. So, shout outs to all of our medical professionals out there, fucking keeping people safe. My God, fucking heroes. Jesus Christ. Even my wife.
Indubitably.
Yeah, my wife.
A saintly woman.
Yeah, if you got diabetes, she'll educate you on
it. She sure fucking will.
That's right, over in St. Joe's. And she'll see her.
She'll still give me cake. I don't care. Because your wife is a wonderful woman who can deal with the complexities of life. All right. Fuck. So I guess the Canadian UFO report really blew me away on the state of geriatrics.
Fucking bummer, dude.
They had nothing to look forward to.
I don't even know
to.
What to do now, man. I'm fucking kind of bummed.
Well, let's see where I must have, because I don't remember why I quoted this.
All
there must be a reason.
Here we go.
It's an odyssey for all of us. Our listeners, us, we don't know. Okay. A word or gesture of comfort from the nurses on duty is all they have in their fading world until the routine of mourning helps them into another day. All they're doing is sitting there alone at night thinking,
dude, what a bummer.
I'm gonna die.
I'm not dead yet. No, they got Frieda and they got Doreen by their sides. These two fucking angels.
Yeah, they are.
Sent from heaven.
Wingless angels.
Yeah, wingless angels. Dude, their hearts are too big.
Flying on the edge of a saucer.
Yeah. And they're fucking God bless these women. Son of a bitch.
It is immediately apparent on meeting them that Miss Kendall and Mrs. Wilson, both in late middle age, were assigned to their particular work with these qualifications in mind. In addition to what training obviously has been given them, they have an inborn quality that invites trust, and it was no surprise after we interviewed them that friends and former patients of each told us that they would accept their word under any circumstance. Coming from several who had doubted the existence of UFOs, this was a significant tribute in light of what the two nurses, with a partial confirmation by two others who arrived seconds later, said they observed outside the hospital just as 1970 was dawning on the Pacific coast. Whew. So, saints. Established.
Fucking thank you, women. Thank you, ladies.
Indeed. Yeah. As in many such media-hyped flaps, there were a few hoaxers making false reports over the following months, and even one case of a fake UFO being released by what may have been chalked up to school kids, drunks, or both.
Ah, drunks and children.
Yeah.
They tell the truth.
the whimsy of a bourbon addict.
I love it.
Jim Drummond. What the fuck? What the fuck was the name of Naked Gun, Leslie Nielsen? Frank Drevin,
yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, Jim, that went nowhere. What was the point of that
Frank
little...
Drevin, continue. Jim
Frank Drevin actually saw this copycat UFO, and that's Jim Drummond, actually, a few days after his initial sighting and had this to say about it. The second one wasn't the same thing at all. You could see it was a kid's job. not a fraction as bright, and it was just bobbing around without really going anywhere.
I like the fact the kids are like, yeah, you see, we're going to get them now, you see?
Yeah, we got it.
See, we're going to get all bourbon.
Chinese lantern, see?
We're going to get all bourboned up with Jeff over here and go launch some fucking UFOs. Jeff. Fucking good for
Of course
them.
They're going to fucking do that.
I hope they were smoking cigarettes, and then later realized.
It's 1970, of course. Yeah. They rolled up in their fucking sleeves, their white tees with their fucking Vitalis pompadours.
Bunch of fucking 10-year-old kids smoking butts all
talking
bourboned
about Bonzi,
up.
Like all kids did then. Like,
in Vancouver?
In 1970,
sure.
Before Happy Days was even a thing.
They were out of their times.
Oh, fucking super fonds.
All right.
Nevertheless, it should come as no surprise that professional skeptics or debunkers, scumbags, have used this incident to dismiss the entire flap. Former UFO skeptic turned eyewitness Frieda Wilson completely dismissed the idea that what she, Doreen, and the other nurses saw was some kind of hoax, stating, "Some people say we were looking at a plastic bag with candles in it, put there as a joke, but it would take a million candles to make it as bright as that." And when I say scumbags, debunkers are scumbags. Just fucking, skeptics are great. Always look at things with an unbiased eye, but don't just shit on things because you're afraid to look at potentials. I'm done.
We have to have a wide open view of this. Skeptics there,
of course.
Too.
Skeptics are welcome.
Everybody
love skeptics. Everyone should be skeptical.
You should.
No one should be a true believer. But the thing about debunkers is they don't realize you're just as susceptible to the true believerisms as the fucking person that's just gung ho that it's a Yeti coming out of a UFO. It's like you are so determined not to be open to anything.
Well,
you're closed.
You know, that's the quagmire of the debunker.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
You're right.
A painful existence.
The quag bunker. Sadly, many of the eyewitnesses involved with this case are no longer with us. They died alone at night with maybe two nurses there to comfort them in their last moments.
R.I.P., dude.
But their accounts remain as a testament to one of the most enigmatic and intriguing close encounters of all time. One that affected myriad lives, leaving some changed for the better and others, no doubt, fearful of the worst. But as has been indicated many times before by individuals infinitely brighter than I, if these beings, whatever their agenda may be, wanted to do us real harm, they could have done so many times over, and there is little we could have done to prevent it. That, in and of itself, doesn't mean that the ETs are inherently good, of course. But then, who would we be to judge? Their agenda would likely be as inscrutable to us as a Broadway musical would be to a tick. But suffice it to say, there seems to be a sort of, if not detente, then at least a mutual consideration to avoid wholesale slaughter between us. And all in all, that's better than nothing.
That's the best ending we could hope for. Just a mutual agreement of like, let's just continue to live hand in saucer.
Yeah. I mean, you're in control. You can do whatever you want. You can manhandle it.
Not saying that we're not going to go down fighting, because fuck that, I am.
Oh, yeah. Well,
yeah,
I'll try.
I'll die on this hill. Yeah, sure. I'll be like Jack Black in fucking Mars Attacks, and you come charging out and just gets roasted. That'll be me.
Everyone turned into like green skeletons.
Yeah, I'll turn into a goddamn American hero. Mark Stoll.
For all its flaws, I don't hate that movie.
I like that movie.
I should. But
no,
I
think that movie's
charming.
Great. Dude, I fucking love Mars Attacks.
I mean, it's
Attacks.
Flawed. Oh, it's so flawed.
Dude, I love Mars Attacks.
But
fucking
yeah.
Tim Burton fucking rules.
He did once.
He's, you know.
He stopped ruling a while ago.
Same with George Lucas. It's okay. Let's move on.
Okay.
Continue
so,
this odyssey.
That is the story of the Cowichan Hospital Odyssey. I did throw in this little thing. When I was doing research on this years ago, when they were refurbishing the front, they put on like the sunburst,
Like a
frontage.
A decorative area in the front of
yeah.
it? Okay. A cool sunburst.
Like a facade.
Okay.
That's
yeah.
what I'm talking
all right,
about.
Cool.
And it looks sort of UFO-y, and I know in like my original article I said something along the lines of like maybe someone on the board of directors was secretly trying to beckon them back. I don't think that's the case at all.
No.
I don't even think it's them necessarily even celebrating the history of it, but I do get a kick out of it existing. But throwing that completely away, because it has nothing to do with anything.
Right.
This really does represent one of the more fascinating and perhaps less celebrated of the UFO cases. One in that it, I guess, ostensibly includes a close encounter of the third kind.
Yeah, we have humanoids. We have multiple ships. Tons of people. We get one humanoid sighting.
Oh, two humanoid sightings, but one. Yes.
Right.
One sighting of two humanoids.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, here, skeptically speaking, I think there's so many... It seems too much to be mistaken for something. Now, granted, if you're going to say like governmental aircraft experiments or whatever, it's way too populated. Way too many people are experiencing it.
You're not wrong. Let's test that water for a second, because walking down the skeptical lane is something we do. Right. They're humanoid. They're finely cut men, according to Nurse Kendall, right. You know, wearing, you know, some technological gadgetry and basically a gauzy mask and bodysuit.
Mm-hmm.
If this was, say, a United States or a Canadian or who the fuck knows what, maybe even Russian experimental craft, maybe based on like so many, you know, people that are, you know, into ufology, like what do they call retrofitted alien? What happens when you reverse technology?
Yeah, yep.
You know what I'm saying. Maybe mm-hmm. it's based on extraterrestrial. I don't know why I'm speeding up. I got to stop bumping rails before the pod. I did not bump any rails.
Cocaine Bobby's back.
No, it's fucking Dayquil Bobby. But fucking. So let me calm down. Maybe it's reverse engineered technology from an extraterrestrial source. Maybe it's them just trying to create a new thing, like, mm-hmm. you know, like just cutting edge technology. And this is a protective suit, but they're just human beings. And maybe they flew over the Bering Strait and it's they figure the Russians thought maybe they could dick around in Canada because it's not like the same as maybe an incursion on United States soil. And it's an island off the Pacific coast, so they can make a quick retreat to whatever ship or whatever the, you know, whatever they took off from.
Mm-hmm.
There is a chance, all my blathering aside, that this could be like a Soviet era or maybe even United States experimental aircraft where kind of like the Cash Landrum thing, like it starts getting wobbly and shitty and instead of having a helicopter escort, this thing, these pilots just have to kind of get their shit together and get out.
Right.
But before they could do so, they were seen by 1,100 dinner parties.
New Year's Day.
Yeah. they almost crashed into like some poor B. Drummond's house.
I mean, these poor pilots are on shift. They probably got fucked up beforehand. They're like, it's fucking New Year's Eve. Fuck Ben. Here we go. Woo. And that's, you know, like, ah, shit, we're in Canada. What the fuck happened? How did we get here? Goddamn. But the only thing with that, though, is I think it would be very fucking hard to have an incursion like that in anybody's airspace.
Right.
Whether it's Canada, the U.S., whatever. You're not going to fly your shit into Canada and then just be like, oh, it's good. Niagara Falls is way the fuck over there. You know, right. Like, it's
An island off the West Coast. If you know, you take off from a ship. And
they
you
still, the and Canadian you, and, Air Force, and, don't.
Oh, don't get me. Listen, I'm not belittling Canadian airspace or their ability to defend it or anything like that.
I'm just saying that no country is going to fuck around.
It's NATO. It's all part and parcel. Yeah. But maybe that's the whole point. If you're experimenting with something that's supposed to look like an alien craft and you have disguised pilots.
Right.
And maybe you have mastered a certain kind of technology that allows you to get in and out pretty quick, because this thing does incredible things.
And you know, if it's reported, and then even people in the Canadian Air Force see it, they might be like, "Oh fuck, we can't talk about this. Like, son of a bitch, what the fuck's going on? They got it's like when our dudes fucking see UAPs and shit and little tic tacs and those stupid fucking globes those stupid fucking triangle things,
sure,
cubes. Maybe that is a thing where they're like, we're going to report this. We're going to be fucked.
Oh, especially back in 1970.
Oh my god, 100%.
You don't want to end up flying a fucking desk. You want to
this could
stay
screw
in the sky.
Them. All right, so the possibility.
I mean, you would think though, with the elapsing of half a century,
right,
that if we had that kind of technology and not like the flying Avro car or whatever the fuck it was, the right. weird disc thing that we know about, that's basically a helicopter that sucks. That if we had some of this, that it would have manifested in some way. But I'm just saying, we can't 100% take off human beings, high technology, Cold War era craziness off the table. I don't personally think that's what
it is.
Cold War craziness is at least, you know, between the salt and pepper shaker and the Satan on the table.
Totally. I mean, honestly, what I think this is that this is just a large flap where all these people, like I said, multiple, at least 300,000 dinner parties at the time, you know, saw everything and they documented it, which is great. Everybody wrote everything down. They made all their documentations. Like, this is what we saw. You got corroborating. You got evidence. You got people.
Curry wrote her stories.
Evidence in the fact of like, is of eyewitness evidence,
sure,
obviously. But everybody kind of came to the same conclusion. Like, yeah, no, it's here. The theory they went with the power, I'm not going to totally poo-poo that.
Well, you got to remember, that's just Quaife and Stanley Jones.
Right, but it's, I mean, especially like how, you know, I mean, how an innumerable, I guess that's a word, UFOs fucking with like nuclear power plants.
Sure.
You know, whether it's like a warning or like they're to like check it out or whatever. You know, maybe that is the case, that they very well could be here. It just seems like, of all the things to come here for, like electricity, I mean, water, I guess I get, because it's probably scarce in the universe.
You'd think.
But like electricity, I mean, like, guys.
I know, you know, but
it ain't like it's that big of a deal, really. You
but
know?
Maybe it's just easier to siphon it off. Like, maybe not everything processes it. I mean, you would think at this point they would have like some sort of super solar cells or something just flying through the cosmos. You get near a sun, you charge right. up, you go. But who knows what their technology is based on? Who knows what the fuck is going on? So if you can like get some processed, you know, uranium, I don't even know. I have no idea what I'm talking about. But if you can just get electricity that's already made in a nuclear power plant and it's just easy to slide over, suck it up, and you don't have to do any of the work yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, people tend to be parasitic. I mean,
I would just assume that, like, if you have that type of technology to traverse fucking the cosmos to get here, and you're like, ooh, electricity. Like, it just seems like, oh, really? Like,
no, I agree. It seems whack. Yeah. But we don't know that's really what they're getting out of it.
No, it's true, because it was just a theory put out there by Quaife and his UFO buddy there. Was it Alan Vern Jones or Alan Jones?
It was
Vernon? BSJ, yeah.
So Vernon Stanley Jones?
Alan Parsons Project?
Alan Parsons Project, yes.
Dude, fuck. So there it is, man. Fuck, Cowichan Encounter, dude. What a fucking great... Again, this is a story that you had written so long ago, and I was so fucking stoked to do it. It's so cool. I love
still a classic.
When we get these stories where there's so many people that see it, and they're all upfront about it, and everyone's like on the same page, like, yes, this is what we saw. And then it just sits there, which is unfortunate, but, you know, it's too bad that more can't be done with it. But it's one of those moments in time where you're like, this happened. We were here. We're sticking by our story.
A broken down UFO.
There it
could have been a mass visitation.
Yeah.
We just don't know. I'm tending to think, maybe because Occam's razor, that people are reporting different manifestations of the same thing.
Yeah,
like it's easier for me to think that it's that one Saturn-like saucer, but when it's spinning a certain way, it looks like a giant ice cream cone.
Right.
But that to me, that might be me being lazy, not even being lazy, like doing my best to fit everything into like the square hole.
Right.
Because that was the first one seen. More fascinating would be the idea that like maybe some were rescue ships, or maybe these people were crash landing and they had like some important fucking shit. So enemy forces were coming to maybe try to intercept them, or and allies were also coming to help them.
Cocaine so Bobby's go down.
The ice cream fucking ship might but in their like assistance, and they're like, maybe they're in this house. No, this is a drunk trucker.
Oh no.
Fuck that. And then the hula hoop one is like the fucking portal.
Oh.
Like the wormhole thing.
Bobby, come
and
back.
The people that shot through the wormhole thing were the ones that were like in the fucking orange cigar that Judge Hallett saw, but then the egg came. The egg came,
we
dude.
Lost you, buddy.
Drummond and the egg.
Drummond and the egg. We lost Bobby.
Did
we're
they get the
get
secret agents? Did they collect the space slugs? Now we're going to the Night of the Creeps territory.
God, no.
Did they get it home?
Dude, to think about it.
Are we a prison world?
Critters. Think about it.
Crites.
Yeah. Crites. Oh,
yeah.
Shit. Thank you all so very much for joining us. The Kryptonaut Podcast. As always, we're on the socials. Robert.
Yes.
The Instas. The Twitters. The Facebooks. I recently started a TikTok.
God bless.
For myself.
Wow.
Not for the pod.
Have you danced?
No, I actually took a video of my little kid robot Cryptid Mothman. Dunny that I have, and I took it. I took a video of him on top of my gelatinous cube pop, and I played like the Mothman song over it and posted it because I was drunk.
Nice.
So I'm just like Mothman, Mothman with your rolling red eyes or whatever. So we're there, we're doing it.
Hey.
I'm still trying to figure out TikTok. As per our Patreon episode last week, I am following the time traveler, so I'll keep everybody on the Patreon up to date with that.
Yeah, if you're not a patron, you want to become a patron just because you need to get your ear to the fucking ground and figure out things are about to change.
Exactly.
Things are moving fast, folks.
We got merch, folks. We got kryptonautmerch.com, which will bring you to our crowd-made store. We also got hellerspace.com, bringing it over to TeePublic. I know there's Black Friday, Gray Thursday, fucking Tan, whatever, Tuesday.
Right. Sure.
I don't know. There's all kinds of different shopping shit going
on.
Salmon Sundays, whatever you want. That's my favorite, actually. There's all kinds of fucking shopping things happening. There's deals everywhere. Jump on the sites. Check it out. Grab what you want to get your peeps for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to get my daughter, actually, one of the Loveland Frog t-shirts.
Oh.
Yeah, she fucking loves it.
That would look adorbs.
And that is available, again, at kryptonautmerch.com and hellerspace.com. Two different merch stores, two different exclusive designs. Check it out there. Patreon.com/CryptoNutPodcast coming up, as mentioned in the beginning of this podcast, as I open up my Discord app and look at the announcements, movie night with the boys has officially been rescheduled for Friday, November 9th at 8:30 p.m.
I'm so excited.
Prince of Darkness.
Goes without saying. Yep, greatest holiday movie ever. There.
If you are on Patreon, you have access to the Discord no matter what tier you are on. When you sign up for it, it will be in the sign-up email. If you don't see the link, let me know and I can send you a link which will walk you through how to sign up for the Discord via your Patreon tier. But there is a catch, Robert.
What's that?
And some people get caught up on this. You need to have a Discord account before you can access our server. You can't just go in there with no account. You got to have your own personal at Rob Morphy, at Mark Storrs, at Kryptonaut Podcast.
But it's easy peasy.
There, yeah, just go to Discord, create your account. The link will be in your email from Patreon. You can click it. You can bring the two together. You'll be on the server. You're going to come to the welcome channel. They'll be like, hey, what's going on?
And if it seems overwhelming,
there it is.
Ask you.
I can send you a link. I send the link all the time to people.
There like, it
here
is.
Here we go. There it is. Boom.
No, I love it. Discord's awesome.
Yeah.
Some of the coolest people, some of the coolest functions. And one of the best things, like show up for the campfire, show up for all sorts of events. But the movie nights are great too, because not only are we watching it and we're, you know, talking some shit, but we have good conversations after.
It's fun. It's
the best way that I found that we were able to interact with the
good,
listeners.
Man.
And I love that because we don't, you know, I mean, we don't often get a chance to chat.
No, if my voice just fucking totally cracked for some reason.
That's all right.
I was like,
Brady.
Oh, it's okay.
It's all great. Right. Prince of Darkness.
All right, there it is. Thank you all so very much. And I'm talking to you soon.
Fucking A right. God, this is fun.
Peace.
I missed you.
Missed you too, buddy.
Yeah.
There it is. Wait till I tell you about my dental bill for my implant.
Oh, goddamn.
It's expensive.
Teeth.
No, this tooth ain't cheap. See ya.
Bye, guys.